How's it going? And welcome to episode 60 of On The Wire, proud member of the Pitcher List Podcast Network. Follow the pod on the Twitter at On The Wire Pod. And if you're looking on a platform that allows ratings and reviews, please take a second to let us know what you think. I am Adam Howe. You can follow me on the Twitter at 80grade. That's all spelled out. Once again, joined by my co-host, Kevin Hastings, who should be followed on the Twitter himself, at Hastings Kevin. And Kevin, I want to just give you an added shout out and say what a great job you did over on the RotoWire podcast with Jeff Erickson. That I'm sure that was a blast.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Always a blast talking baseball. Jeff's awesome. We know that. We all know that. I'm sure that all of our listeners listen to him regularly. I'm especially fond of the Thursdays. He's been having different guests each week on Thursday, like I got to do this week. And it was an absolute blast, as you said.
Yeah, just talking with Jeff. He's obviously on the show two months ago. He's just so incredibly easy to talk to. And when you're talking baseball with Jeff Erickson, it just flows. It doesn't matter if there's things you need to talk about or just want to talk about. It's just It could have went 3 hours if you wanted.
The Max Scherzer 6 to 8 weeks broke right as we were starting. We were hoping it might have been more of a mild strain. So we just broke right into that. Worked out great.
There you go. We'll get to that in a little bit in the show as well. So that's a nice little teaser you got there. But to help us go over all the news and notes and then some recommendations for Fab, we brought in a special guest of our own. I have the pleasure of introducing Derek Carty, creator of the Bat and the BatX projection systems. He joins us to break down Fab options as well as to discuss how the Bat adjusts to new variables and filters the noise out as it comes up throughout the course of the season. Derek can be found regularly contributing to Roto Grinders, where the DFS version of the Bat lives, and has contributed to ESPN, The Athletic, and EV Analytics. So make sure to check out all his work there, and you can find all of that on his Twitter. That's at Derek Carty. That'll be linked in the show description as well. Derek, man, thanks for taking the time to join us this week.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
We're going to get right into it. And we got a little bit more news and notes, I think, than we've had in the last couple of weeks. So let's dive right in. Kevin, we are going to start off with you. And in St. Louis, Tyler O'Neill went to the IL. And Nolan Gorman got the call on Thursday, and he started at second base on Friday. He went 1-for-3 at the walk and a run scored. And lo and behold, no strikeouts in his debut, which I think will surprise some people. The joke going around, of course, was that Nolan Gorman would fit right into Tyler O'Neill's spot in at this 30% K rate. But as far as I remember, the Cardinals made it pretty clear prior to the season starting that they were not going to call up Gorman to St. Louis unless there was everyday playing time for him. So I ask you, should we be assuming he'll get said playing time for the foreseeable future, or is this simply a Band-Aid until O'Neill is back?
I think that it really depends on how he performs over the next week and a half and until O'Neill comes back, if it is a minimum stay on the IL. They have some other players in the lineup that have had some issues. Dylan Carlson, until the last few days, was really struggling this year. Now he's got multi-hit games in 4 of his last 6, I believe. So that's panning out better. Brandon Donovan is hitting pretty well at near the top of the Cardinals lineup. But 1 home run, 1 stolen base on the season. Maybe they're looking for a little more there. I think he has an opportunity to play his way into remaining with the team. But if he struggles, like many of the young players we've seen called up this season and over the years, then he may be sent back down for that extended playing time. So that was a long way of saying, I'm not sure, Adam.
Excellent. That's why we go over these things. Of course, Gorman, part of this little mini Fabapalooza that we might be seeing this Sunday night, and we'll get to a couple more of those in a little bit. I personally put a lot of stock into the fact that the Cardinals said what they said about not wanting to bring up Gorman until he had a path of playing time. Obviously, injuries have created that path for him right now. I do worry that they might want to gain a little bit more of extra time by sending him back down once they're a little bit healthier, just so they can be guaranteed that extra Super 2 status, which nobody knows exactly when that date is until the season is over. But it's typically enough time where if you miss through mid-June, you're usually safe and you usually get that status. So I think if they were to send them back down for another 3 or 4 weeks, they might gain that from him. So it would be something I'd be... I have Gorman plenty of places, so I'm hoping that's not going to be the case, especially in my DCs. But and I did start him this weekend just because I'm like, all right, why not? I'm going to see if he starts off hot and gets the adrenaline going from the rookie call-up. We'll see how things go.
The power's been absolutely amazing this year, and that may be what's contributing to the higher strikeout rate, because we haven't seen this from him before. So that's what's going to be really intriguing to see. Is he selling out for power and continue to strike out? His strikeout rate is 15 percentage points higher than it was in 328 plate appearances at the same level last season. Yeah, it's going to be fun to see how he reacts.
All right, we're going to stay in St. Louis, and Derek, in, on the pitching side, they made another call up. Matthew Liberatore got the call. He starts on Saturday as we're recording. This game has not started yet, so we'll be able to keep tabs on how he does tonight. And what's nice is that he does get that start on a Saturday, making him eligible to be picked up in fab bidding this weekend if he is still available or if he wasn't drafted in your NFBC leagues. Curious to know your thoughts on what kind of expectations do you have for Liberatore for the next few weeks, if not rest of season? And should we be expecting similar bids on Sunday that we saw for the likes of George Kirby or even Matt Brash earlier on in the season?
Yeah, people love their prospects, so I wouldn't be surprised at all if the bids are similar to, you know, what we saw for Kirby. At least in the short term, I like Kirby more than Liberatore. I know the bat does. I know just about every other projection system does. I think part of that is just that, like, Liberatore's minor league numbers have been not overwhelming. They've been good, but they haven't been great. Like, he struck out, like, one guy per nine, basically, and when you translate that to the majors, it's just really unimpressive. So it's the kind of thing where he's a prospect, he has stuff, he can come up and surprise people, but it's also within the realm of possibility that he needs some more polish. He's not really going to be anything special right away. So it's a dart throw. If you want to take a shot on a guy that has upside, sure. I don't have him projected anywhere near as well as I have Kirby projected right now.
The other thing that he's got going against him, I think, in the short term, is just the overall schedule. Yeah, he's got Pittsburgh today, which is a nice landing spot for his first major league start, sure. But he lines up facing off against Milwaukee, probably gets the Padres after that, and he may or may not get the Cubs. If he misses the Cubs, he'll get Tampa Bay. So his next couple matchups don't look that appealing, especially even if you're just trying to stream a guy. So it's something to keep an eye on when you are making those bids on a name like Liberatore, I think.
Yeah, obviously matchups are huge, especially a guy who, if he does struggle, could get sent back down. So you want him to get off to a good start if you are going to try to make a run for him.
All right. Unfortunately, we're not going to talk about a call up here. We're going to talk a couple of injuries back to back here on the next couple of news sections. Kevin, let's start in New York, where, of course, Tyler McGill and Jacob DeGrom are on the IL. And now Max Scherzer, as you alluded to earlier, joins them with a diagnosed oblique strain and should miss 6 to 8 weeks or thereabouts. Everybody knows how much everybody loves to talk about oblique strains and how long you're probably out for and how they might linger. But question is, in New York, who can or who is stepping up to anchor or fill out that rotation for the Mets?
I don't believe it's been announced officially, but I don't see them not recalling David Peterson. He's pitched well in spite of still having a little bit of issues with the walks, but he's had a couple of starts with the Mets already this season, actually four of them, I believe, a 1.89 ERA and over 20 innings pitched. The strikeouts are there, almost a strikeout per inning. So I really think we'll see him. I know on Roster Resource, they have him starting Monday. Then when they also have Felix Pena getting a start on Wednesday, which is intriguing. He's bounced back and forth between middle relief and a few starts throughout his career. Nothing really special, but nothing really horrible either. And a strikeout per inning guy. So there may be some intrigue there a little bit as a much less expensive option. I think where David Peterson is available, he's going to be expensive this weekend.
Yeah, I think so too. If nothing else, just the fact that you've got outlets to resource. Yahoo has him listed as a starter on Monday as well. And if he's already being announced by multiple outlets, as even if the Mets haven't announced it, people are going to feel like they're jumping ahead of everybody else to grab him. So two-star option there. If not, gets pushed back a little bit. He might get two starts the following week. So good option to take a look at there for the Mets. All right, Derek, it seems as though everybody and their cousin are getting Tommy John surgery this week, unfortunately. At least one position player, Carter Kieboom of the Nationals, was announced to have season-ending surgery. And then a couple of pitchers, Chris Paddock of the Twins and Luis Gil of the Yankees as well. Do either of the pitchers on this list open up a spot for anyone interesting to join their team's pitching staff in a more prominent role?
Not really. Both teams have, you know, basically five starters locked in, even without them. It seems we might see the occasional spot start from like a Devin Smeltzer or maybe a Davey Garcia or something like that. But really, they have full rotations. I don't think there's anyone you really have to go out of your way to target here. I much prefer Peterson as a fill-in guy. I think he's a really solid starter in a good position, and he'd be the guy that I'd be prioritizing for sure.
Yeah, I'm also waiting to see if there's any news on Chad Green and his injury and what his options are. I haven't seen anything official, but I know he's waiting on a couple of different options. And usually when I see a headline like that, like he's waiting for multiple opinions, TJ has to be one of those opinions, I'm assuming.
It is certainly possible. I don't like to speculate on injuries, sure. But it's never a good thing to hear that.
All right, Kevin, somebody came back from the IL, so let's have some good news here. Mitch Garver returns from the IL for the Rangers on Thursday. But my question is, how worried should fantasy managers be if they've gotten used to Jonah Heim's positive contributions, especially in two-catcher leagues where Garver is probably had been stashed still?
I don't think there's any worry at all for the near future. Mitch Garver has not started a throwing program yet as of yesterday's report. So he's exclusively designated hitter right now for Texas. So I think Jonah Heim is their main catcher for the foreseeable future, and that he's performed well. Projections like him, not quite as much as what he has done so far, but they're nice looking forward. So I think we're going to continue to see Jonah Heim in there.
Yeah, with Garver being the everyday DH, obviously they also sent down Nick Solak to AAA. And so they don't have as many mouths to feed there. So he should hold on to that DH spot for as long as his arm dictates. All right, Derek, in San Francisco, Lamont Wade Jr. went back to the IL. And Brandon Belt was scratched from Saturday's contest with knee discomfort. So do you see either one of these moves impacting playing time for anyone in particular in San Francisco, at least for the next week or so?
I don't think there's anyone that's going to get like a massive boost because of this, especially because San Francisco tends to mix and match their guys so much. They play the matchups, they pinch hit everybody. We'll see Tommy La Stella in there. We'll see Darren Ruff and Wilmer Flores and Austin Slater and Luis Gonzalez. And it's just going to be a mishmash, basically, I would imagine.
Yeah, Wilmer Flores was the replacement for Belt at the DH spot on Saturday's game after he was scratched. I agree. That tends to be the conversation that revolves around San Francisco and how Gabe Kapler puts together his lineups. And I don't see that changing based on one injury or even two injuries to their lineup. So I agree with you on that. All right, Kevin, the big news, of course, heading into this weekend is one of the top prospects in baseball, Adley Rutschman, is up for the Orioles. And Alex Fast is doing a little bit of a jig, I'm sure. Unfortunately, not able to go to the game, still enjoying himself as the lone Orioles fan that we are aware of in our life. But he batted sixth on Saturday, so he will be eligible to be bid on in where he is available in the NFBC format. But my question, though, is do you think this impacts the Baltimore lineup and the batters around him, or does it affect the rotation more with his catching ability behind the plate? And does it make you more or less likely to stream Baltimore pitchers with Rutschman back there?
I'm going to go with the second question first here. It doesn't influence me to stream Baltimore pitchers anymore, at least not yet. I think this is something that'll take a little bit of time to get established. And their schedule this week's pretty brutal. at the Yankees and at the Red Sox, and the Red Sox are waking up a little bit. So
well, Trevor Story is waking up a little bit.
Yeah, Trevor Story is waking up a lot. So I don't think it really influences me in that direction. Unfortunately, he's not available as much as I thought he would be. Obviously, he was drafted everywhere, but I thought in NFBC formats, he may have been dropped in some places. He's rostered in all 47 main events. He's rostered in 98% of online championships. So look, make sure you're not one of the lucky ones to take that couple of seconds to check. But in Yahoo leagues, shallower leagues, he is only 64% rostered. And I think this is a single catcher league player here with potential for that. So in those a little bit over a third of Yahoo leagues, take a look, see if he's available, depending on you who you have at your in your catcher spot right now.
And if I were to speculate on anything with Baltimore, with Adley's call-up here, I venture to guess that Grayson Rodriguez isn't that far behind, because those two have been going up the ladder together pretty much their entire minor league career, as short as Rutschman's minor league career has been, actually. Rutschman's supposed to be that leader for that the next generation pitching staff, and it'd be weird to have the next generation pitching staff playing in a different stadium than the catcher that's supposed to be bringing them up. So I would venture to guess that if you're holding Grayrod, maybe hold him a little bit longer.
And maybe even DL Hall as well. Some include sure. him in that same conversation.
Absolutely. All right, Derek, last point here. Chris Sale threw 15 pitch bullpen session on Thursday for the Red Sox. And it's his first throwing in a long time since, you know, April when he had that setback. If anyone out there is held onto Sale this long, do you think that they should be all in here, or is it worth freeing up a roster spot? I mean, even if you don't need the bench spot to have that flexibility, in at what point would you be expecting out of Sale in actual production when he finally does come back?
Yeah, if you've been holding on to Sale this long, you absolutely have to keep holding him. And I think there's even really a good case to be made for, if you do have that bench spot that you don't need, picking him up and seeing what happens over the next couple of weeks with him, because you never know what's going to happen when a guy comes back from injury, especially a guy like Sale, who it feels like has dealt with so many of them over the last few years. But literally every time we've ever seen Chris Sale healthy, he's been one of the best pitchers in baseball. And I know he's getting older. I know he's coming off the injury. There's lots of unknowns here. But the upside is a top five pitcher on a per inning basis. That's what you could get out of Chris Sale. And there's lots of downside. You could get literally nothing. You know, depending on your own kind of personal risk reward penchant, I really do what you could potentially get out of him.
Yeah, I agree. I've only held Sale in one of my leagues. It gets to a point where every week I think about cutting him, but I haven't found myself I've been lucky enough to not have to force myself to cut him for other reasons. He would have been somebody I would cut just because of needing that extra flexibility. Luckily, I haven't needed it that badly in that scenario. So we will see what he can do when he can do it. And I think that's the biggest question with Sale. Is it's nice to know that he's throwing. He actually had a bullpen session, but we'll likely still out until, I would say, probably the All-Star break at the earliest from everything that I've gathered. All right, that's going to wrap up our news and notes section of the episode. As always, I'm sure we missed some things worth noting. To keep up with all the news of the day, make sure you're listening to the First Pitch podcast with James Schiano, Chad Young, and Scott Chu, which breaks down the news, highlights, and observations from every day's worth of games, as well as looking ahead at each slate to keep you up to date with everything you need to know to win your fantasy league. In just a moment, we're going to talk to Derek Carty about how his projection systems adjust to new variables and come up with how he filters out the noise and nonsense from the important stuff. We'll get to all that and more right after this quick break.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball, even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right. Thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
All right. We are back on the Wire podcast with I am Adam Howe, joined by Kevin Hasting, and today's special guest, Derek Carty, the creator of The Bat and The Bat X Projections. We are talking to Derek about exactly how he adjusts the bat throughout the season and why that's important, especially since the bat is offered as a daily fantasy tool as well through Roto Grinders. And if you're doing daily fantasy and you're not utilizing that tool, you're probably doing it wrong, or you could at least be doing it better. So Derek, can you talk to me in a very general sense about what it is that, how the bat gets adjusted as time goes on throughout the season, as walls get pushed back in stadiums, as balls are, you know, speculated to be different in different stadiums? Like, what kind of noise are you trying to filter out in order to make the most accurate system that you possibly can, which you have done year in, year out?
Yeah, essentially, you're just trying to figure out what matters and to what extent, and as much as possible, let the system sort out all the specifics with the Camden Yards fences. We knew ahead of time, okay, this is going to have an impact because it's just a huge move of the fences and it's going to have an impact. But what's the extent of the impact and how do we measure that? And so that's the kind of thing that I had to go in. I've basically developed a model within the system that says, okay, when you move a fence by 1 foot or you raise a fence by 1 foot, this is what happens. And so you apply that to the move that Baltimore made. And then based on what we've seen historically with teams moving fences, we can get a pretty good idea of what's going to happen in Baltimore. So that gets applied to the projection. As far as the ball being dead this year and that sort of thing, the bat has a system in place that looks at basically league-wide rates over the course of the whole season and over a smaller, more recent stretch. And so it looks at those two things. It adjusts them for context, obviously, over the smaller stretches or early in the year. There's going to be things to account for. When it's looking the first week of April, trying to figure out, okay, what's going on with the ball this year? We've seen mostly aces so far after the first couple days, but we've also had cold temperatures. Maybe we haven't seen any course field yet. So like it'll adjust for all of these things and say, okay, once you adjust for it, this is what the league-wide strikeout rate is, the league-wide home run rate, the league-wide BABIP, walk rate, whatever. And then it will say, okay, based on past tests that I've run or that the bat has run, it knows how stable each of these things are, how long it takes before you can begin trusting them. And so it factors that in. And little by little, the bigger the sample size gets, the more it starts to trust it and the more it starts to trust it. And it is constantly reevaluating basically what it thinks that the league-wide run environment right now or going forward is going to be. And so it's just filled with stuff like that, that is just constantly evaluating things and adjusting based on the most recent data.
Yeah, I think that the thing, especially with the bat and just projection systems that update throughout the season, I know not all of them don't, like Ariel Cohen that told us early in the season, he doesn't update his throughout the course of the season, but I know there are multiple ones that do, is the fact that these projection systems with the bat specifically, you're taking so many of these things into account that I think a lot of people take that for granted, and that they create noise or they listen to noise where they don't have to, especially like on Twitter or just wherever. And if you find a projection system that you trust or that has put up historically good results like the bat has in recent years, that maybe you're able to put a little bit more trust into that and go off on your own. If that's not what you do, like I know it's not what I do professionally or just in general. And so I want to give a shout out to that, just that aspect of the game. Kevin, how do you utilize, if you utilize projections at all throughout the course of the season, especially ones that get updated like the bat, compared to how do you use it in preseason? And we talked about that a lot before the season started, how important they are, at least as a jumping off point. How important are they to you when you're looking at fab for a week on a weekly basis, never mind just rest of season.
I was very fortunate to get to have a couple of conversations with Derek in Arizona this past year at First Pitch Arizona. And he really made me realize something I already knew, but I wasn't really accepting. And that's trusting the projections. Things that we think this may, I have a reason that I like someone more than they do or they don't. They're probably already accounted for in the projections. And I think that's what he was briefly alluding to just a moment ago. It's probably already accounted for in those projections. Other than with, I think the only thing is if we see for a good reason that there's going to be a difference in playing time, plate appearances, innings pitched that the projections have not incorporated yet, that's really the only time that I'm going to think I know more than the projections do in season now as well. In the past, there was I remember it was a few years ago, and this is why the Bat X is so awesome. I remember specifically a few years ago on Rates and Barrels, Saris saying that barrels were not incorporated in projection systems. So that off season, I adjusted things a little bit, but based on that a little bit, Derek's taken care of that for us. And he's already done that with most things, and we may not realize it. So if you start changing things because of a certain aspect, you're probably giving it too much weight because it's already accounted for. So to answer your question, a lot more now in season than I used to.
Yeah. Kevin makes like such a great point. So many people try to get, you know, into the weeds of like advanced stats and I'm going to analyze this about this player. And this is why I know that I'm better than the projections. And it's the projections know these things too, but they're not inherently biased the way that the human brain can be. And it's accounting for these things in a systematic way based on what we know about how much these things matter and how they impact performance based on what has happened over years and hundreds of players that we've seen this data for. So yeah, one of the most important things I always tell people is just understand what goes into a projection. Because if you're trying to beat a projection or you're trying to get a little bit edge beyond the projection, you really need to be accounting for something that the projection isn't. Because otherwise, you're just spinning your wheels and you're probably going to lose accuracy because the human brain is just not capable of accounting for these things better than a computer can.
But Derek, those GIFs are so nasty. Come on. I mean, you have to draft somebody based on the GIFs alone. Yeah, I can appreciate. I've heard you say this before on other places, and I'm glad you're able to echo it again here for my own sake, if not also for our listeners, the fact that you have to find something that they're not projecting for. And if you think that's important, sure, fine. Build your projections based on that. But more than likely, as Kevin said, if it's something that's important to the player, it's being accounted for in most projections, and especially in the Bat X, where you're taking into account all the StatCast data that wasn't, as I said, wasn't being accounted for prior.
Yeah, Adam, yeah, exactly. I think I've brought this up previously on the show in the off season, but that in Arizona, I asked Derek if there was anything he would take into consideration and go against his own projections. And his response was, why would you want to?
Yeah, again, it's really just like if something is not in the system or if it's something that is hard to quantify, I think those are the places where you can find the most edge. You guys mentioned playing time. Like, I'm not trying to systematically project playing time. It's just coming from this year, it just used ATC playing time. But if you think that you have some insight into how a guy's going to be utilized, you can probably beat the bat on those types of things. That's the kind of stuff really that I think you're going to find the most edge with. It's not by looking into a guy's barrel rate or his zone contact percentage or whatever. Like that's the kind of stuff where I really don't think there's much use in doing that, except to maybe identify guys with higher upside, because a projection is the average expectation, but there are guys that will have upside beyond that. If a guy did something that looked good over a small sample, the projection won't buy into it. But if he continues doing that, well, then you have upside.
So I guess that's a good point in the fact that if you want to jump on somebody early, you might beat the projection in that way because they're not taking into account such small samples.
That's you might beat it on that one individual guy. If you were to do that over and over again, you would lose to the projection on average. Mm-hmm. But in some leagues, you really just want that upside. And you might take being wrong 80% of the time because the 20% of the time you're right, you win the league. So I do see that kind of argument sometimes, and I think it's valid.
And I can venture to, I can see that working in like a dynasty league more often than a redraft league where you're able to take a little bit more chances for a long-term result rather than it hurting you that much more in the short term in a redraft league.
Yeah, absolutely. Projections are notoriously pessimistic on prospects just because so many of them bust, because we don't have as robust data for minor leaguers, because so many of them wind up being terrible, honestly, is the real reason. And people just don't like to admit it, but so many of them wind up being terrible, or at least just average. But yeah, you can definitely look for upside there because some of them are going to be Ronald Acuna and Fernando Tatis. A lot more are going to be Jared Kelenic and whoever else is.
I was really wondering who you were going to go with your example there. And Kelenic was the one in my head as well. So shout out to all the Kelenic stands out there. So that was good. Dylan Carlson, as you mentioned earlier, Kevin, might fit into that boat as well, even with his recent hot start. So we'll see how everybody ends up. And obviously with a couple of call-ups this weekend, we'll have even more sample size there to see who's going to be the next Acuna versus who's going to be not so much. All right. That was all great, Derek. I really appreciate the insight into kind of how you're adjusting the bat throughout the season. And as I mentioned earlier, the DFS version of the bat is available over at Roto Grinders, and you guys should be utilizing that, especially if you're playing DFS, but also just in general, looking for that those projections for the next week or so. If you're looking at FAB, it's a good tool when you're looking at those scenarios as well, based on the matchups and what have you. So make sure you're checking that out. And in the meantime, let's talk about who we might be looking at for this week's FAB. As always, we do go through category by category. Who's going to help you in the power categories versus the speed, and then different pitching categories as well. We'll start off in the power category. Who, Kevin, first and foremost, I want to give a shout out to our guest last week, Derek Butcher, who nailed his Christian Walker call out, and Josh Rojas for that matter, though that was in the speed category. Still, if you picked him up, you're not unhappy with this 3 home run performance. Walker is just crushing it this week as well. And as Kevin pointed out to me earlier, he's still available in 30% of online championships. So probably gone in those 15 teamers. He was probably gone in those 15 teamers before last week as well. I don't remember what Derek said his percentages were, but still available in about a third of 12 teamers out there. So make sure you're checking out. He's not cooling down. That's a power option right there moving forward. But Kevin, what other options you got for us that might give us a couple of bombs this week?
I like Cole Calhoun in Texas. He's playing every day, middle third of the lineup, 6 home runs the last couple of weeks. That's the kind of thing that I know Derek is like, a couple of weeks is a small sample. Absolutely it is. But I did, once again, Saris, I heard him on Rates and Barrels this week, talk about a little bit of a change in Cole Calhoun's stance. He's standing with his feet closer together. He thinks that's really helping him. Maybe it is, maybe it's mental. But if in any way it is helping at all, that's the kind of thing that can help you get out in front of the projections adjusting for it. And the projections like him as well, rest of season. The Bad X has him for 14 more home runs coming the rest of the season with a 235 batting average, which is right around what we expect out of Cole Calhoun in his career, who we've seen hit over 30 home runs before. The everyday playing time and the little bit of change in batting stance, Cole Calhoun right now, and he is pretty widely available, only 34% rostered in main events and 1% online championships. And I expect that to change drastically this weekend.
I like how you made the 235 average a selling point, where that actually is.
That's league average right now.
That's league average. But I still hear it, and I'm like, my mind goes back 3 or 4 years. I'm like, even just 3 or 4 years ago, that sounds detrimental. But obviously now that's not hurting you. At least it's not hurting you. All right, Derek, you got your eye on any other power sources for this coming weekend?
Yeah, I still love Christian Walker too. Like, I have him on every roster. So if he's still out there, he's your guy for sure. But I think Colin Moran is interesting. It looks like he's available, I think when I looked, about 60% of main events. He's a guy like Cole Calhoun, who I really like. Old and boring and just like a guy that people aren't really going to get enthused about. And we do need to see how the playing time is going to shake out a little bit in Cincinnati with Joey Votto back now. But this is a guy who has real skills, real power. Like, he's a slightly above average hitter with solid power, and he plays in a good environment. Cincinnati's Great American Ballpark is basically the best park in baseball for home runs, and now it's starting to heat up there. And so I think with hotter weather, he's got all home games this week, and I think even just over the course of the rest of the year, I think there is some upside here for Moran. And I just think the Reds in general are a better team than people give them credit for. I know they got off to a really bad start this year, but I think a lot of that was bad variance. Like, they're much closer to a 500 team than they are to the worst team in baseball.
Yeah, anytime you throw a combined no-hitter and still lose the game, you're not in a good place. Simple as that. And then they score 15 runs the game after or before that? So they obviously have it. They obviously can do it. Just a little bit of bad luck, I'm sure, is involved. I like the Cincinnati call-out. As we move into the speed section, I'm going to start off with a Cincinnati call-out of my own, and that's TJ Friedl, who's just running rampant right now on the base pass. He obviously has a green light from David Bell to pretty much go whenever he has an opportunity, and he's taken over 13% of those opportunities that he's seen since the start of May. He's pretty much played and led off almost every game for the Reds, and so we always say there's value in a leadoff hitter regardless of how bad your team actually is. He probably, and as Paul Spohr would say, he should be rostered. He might not be for your team, but he should be rostered by somebody in your league at this point based on the opportunity that he's been provided for the Reds. He's had 4 stolen bases in the last 8 games, and the only thing keeping him back is that 239 OBP, which you have to get on base in order to get an opportunity to steal bases. But it's not by due to strikeouts. He's got less than a 20% strikeout rate, which he's had throughout the minors as he was coming up. It's mostly the 175 batting average, which that one is much lower than that league average, that 235 we talked about with Calhoun, and the 212 BABIP that's holding him down a little bit. So if he can write that strip and start getting on base a little bit more and keep that 13% stolen base attempt pace, which he's 4-for-4 in his stolen bases, so he's got no reason to stop him from running. Somebody that is still readily available, 28% rostered in main events, 2% rostered in online championships, so widely available out there. Could, as long as he keeps his speed burst up, he could continue to give you stolen bases, and he's still at the top of the lineup, so he's still going to score some runs, even if it is with the Reds. Kevin, you got another leadoff hitter, or sometimes leadoff hitter on here. So who are you looking at for in the speed category?
Yeah, Eli White, another Texas Ranger, 2-for-2 on Rangers here so far, he's leading off against right-handed starting pitching, 2/3 to 70% of the time. He's the leadoff hitter. And just like you just brought up, he's being allowed to run rampant. I think he's got 5 stolen bases in the last week and a half. They have a pretty nice schedule coming up. Last week, I had another Texas Ranger in this spot, and it was because I really thought Brad Miller would lead off and get a stolen base against Noah Syndergaard, but it was Eli White that did it. And they get the Angels again this week, and they get Noah Syndergaard again. Eli White here, and actually throughout the week, he's going to, as you said, lead off against right-handed hitters. Seems like him and Brad Miller flip spots. He goes to the bottom of the order against lefties, and Brad Miller moves back to the top. So I still like them both.
He has Eli White, you're absolutely right, is running rampant. He's taken 38% of his opportunities, which is just ungodly. He can't keep that pace up, but if he stays anywhere close to it, he just knows that he has that green light, and he'll continue to run until he fails, which he has not done yet this year. All right, Derek, you got another speedster on here, so I want to hear what you have to say about him. Who are you looking at for some speed?
Yeah, I think both of your guys are safer choices. I actually grabbed Friedl myself in Tout Wars, I think, a week or two ago. My guy's a deeper cut, a guy that you're really holding to hope that a little bit of more playing time opens up for him. But Roman Quinn is available in 98% of main events, and he's a guy that, if he plays, we know is going to be running. He's one of the fastest guys in baseball. He's had 29 plate appearances this year, and he already has 4 stolen bases with a 172 OBP. Like, he just needs to play and get on base at an okay clip, which all the projections think he'd be able to do. And he's a guy that could turn into a stolen base force. The main reason I bring him up is because of this Bryce Harper situation. We don't know exactly what's going on with him. I wouldn't be surprised if we see him shut down for a while. And if we do, there could be extra at-bats there for Quinn. Odubel Herrera is the other guy that's been in the mix for him, and Quinn's mostly only been playing against lefties. But if Herrera were to struggle, or if even one more injury were to hit, Quinn could be in line for a sizable workload and could just be one of the better stolen base guys in baseball if he ever were to get anything resembling regular playing time.
I'd like to add that, especially for the first half of this coming week, the Phillies are set to face a couple of lefties. So Quinn should absolutely be in that lineup for those couple of games. And the little bit of pop that he has shown throughout his career is almost exclusively came against lefties as well. So at least for the first half in FBC formats, that's a great call out for this week.
Yeah, and as we mentioned last week, just a great stash, just a good stash for, as Derek, as you mentioned, if and when that playing time were to come along, you'll already have them and you won't have to worry about raising that price, because that price sooner or later will just skyrocket. If all of a sudden Harper is like out indefinitely and Quinn's going to get much more playing time, those bids are going to go triple digits if Quinn's going to get six out of seven games in a given week. All right, speaking of some opportunity that could behoove of some players, that going into our opportunity section, some schedule notes to keep an eye out for this week as you're considering maybe some tiebreakers, some playing time accounts. We have 14 teams that have at least a seven-game week ahead of them, including Boston, Baltimore, the Yankees, Cleveland, Detroit, Minnesota, Oakland, Atlanta, Philly, Washington, Cincinnati, Milwaukee, Colorado, and the Dodgers. So plenty of teams with a full work week ahead of them. Boston, Baltimore do have the day off, Boston being off Monday and Baltimore being off Thursday, but they have a scheduled doubleheader on Saturday. So that's nice to have the four game weekend for in those NFBC formats where you're switching out your lineups on Thursday or on Fridays. But it does give them a full seven-game work week because of the doubleheader. And after playing all their games at home last week, Colorado will be on the road for all seven games next week, with three in Pittsburgh and four in Washington. So that rocky road should be something to consider when looking at streaming some pitchers in those scenarios. And you're not going to get the benefit of those bats being in Colorado. Both Chicago-based teams, the Cubs and the White Sox, have the dreaded Friday off day next week, which nobody will be able to convince me why that exists. And then the White Sox and Miami are the only teams that have two off days next week. So something to keep an eye out. But of course, with the White Sox having the off day on Friday, you're going to get that one day off in each of the lineup changes in the NFBC type formats. So Kevin, after all that, is there anybody that you're taking advantage of this schedule or any of the other situations that I didn't mention?
Yeah, a couple of things I'd like to bring up. One, Kyle Farmer. Derek brought up Cincinnati, probably a little better than we think, especially as it heats up. Kyle Farmer is a better baseball player than fantasy baseball player, but he's not horrible. And Cincinnati has a full seven-game week, and four of them coming against lefties. He has a few over 1,000 career plate appearances, 300 of them versus lefties. So much better versus lefties than righties. So it's a nice week if you're in need of a middle infielder to have Kyle Farmer in your lineup in a pinch. And then anybody from the Minnesota Twins for the next couple of weeks, anybody available for the Twins, they do not have an off day until June 6th. They have Detroit for three games this week, then the Kansas City Royals for four, and then the following week they start with five games against the Detroit Tigers in the first half of the week with a doubleheader on that Tuesday. So any hitters available, the relievers, this is jumping ahead a little bit, but whether it be for saves or ratios, when they're playing that many games in such a short amount of time, you can have Duran, you can have Pagan, you could have Duffy, any of them in your lineup, and hope that you're going to get a save or two throughout the week because they're playing so many games.
Yeah, we talk about playing time is key. Take a look at what options you have there, who's available on your wire in Minnesota. Derek, anybody out there worth taking advantage of some of the opportunities that we see for this week or beyond?
Yeah, volume is so key in fantasy. So often fantasy players get bogged down in like skills and upside and hype. Just taking guys that are going to get pure volume is like one of the main things that I do in fantasy, because if you take a boring guy who's going to get volume, he's going to get you more value than a sexier guy that's going to get less volume, generally speaking, especially from a value perspective, sure, price considered standpoint. So really, anyone from these teams, especially the bad teams on this list, if we know that these guys are going to play every day or close to every day, I have no problem. Like, I love the Farmer call. I think the Farmer call is fantastic in deeper formats and shallower formats where some of these guys maybe aren't available in like your main events or that type of thing. But in your deeper formats where, or sorry, in your really shallow formats where the guys, I don't know, like a Ramon Laureano or a Jonathan Scope or an Owen Miller or just like guys like that from bad teams that are just going to play, take a shot on them. See who's available in your league, essentially.
Yeah, and then something else we didn't really call out is just keep an eye on Toronto's schedule. I don't have it in front of me, but if you're like me, you lost Brandon Drury over the weekend. Obviously, Tyler Molly didn't travel with the team either. The pitchers, it doesn't affect that as much because they're still going to get their innings in the when they come back over the border. But keep an eye on that and knowing who may or may not be traveling for 3 to 4 games with their teams as well. All right, let's move into pitching, and we're going to look a little bit further ahead than this week and look at our future two-star pitcher options. As I told you guys, there's a list of pitchers here that tentatively could have two starts, not this coming week, but the following week. That would be the week of May 30th. And so, Derek, I'm going to start with you. Just give me a guy or two off this list that I should also preface this, that the list is made up of players, pitchers that are 50% rostered or less in Yahoo leagues. So of course, these are your daily, mostly daily league formats. So some of these roster percentages may be different than what you're looking at. So of course, as we always say, make sure you're checking to see if they're available or not. But is there a name on here based on the matchups that you really like that you'd be willing to stash for this week and then hold off hoping that they get the two start week, the week of the 30th?
Yeah. So I think there's a couple interesting names on this list. Martin Perez is the first one. He's available less widely than everybody else, but he gets a really good matchup this week in Oakland. And then he gets a couple of pretty good matchups the following week with Tampa Bay and Seattle. He's really performing over his head this year. I don't think he's any different than the Martin Perez we've seen for the last 5-10 years, but the matchups are solid. And so I think he's really interesting. And then I think Aaron Civale is really interesting. I wouldn't play him in his matchup this week against Houston, but if you wanted to stash him for next week, he gets Kansas City and Baltimore. And I think he becomes one of the most valuable pitchers of the entire week, 2 weeks from now.
This is exactly what we're gunning for, is Civale with that, with those matchups against Kansas City. And granted, it's in Baltimore, but it's still Baltimore, that his price in Fab next weekend will skyrocket, probably at least 25 to 40% higher than what you could get him for this week, as people aren't, they might not be looking at starting him in a Houston. And there is a certain mentality of certain people out there that if I bid on somebody, I have to start him. Obviously, that's not the rule in most leagues. I do believe it's either Tout or Labor does have that rule. Derek, you could probably clarify that for me.
They both do.
They both do. All right, there you go. But NFBC, no, you can. I picked up Roman Quinn last week for the exact same reason. I'm like, I don't plan on playing him until he gets that playing time. I'm going to stash him because I have a quote stash bench spot available, and that's where you use these pickups of these guys. Kevin, is there any names on here that you like? And on the flip side, is there a name on here that you think is going to be popular that you're going to be fading?
There's definitely a guy I like here. I actually have him for our next category before you put the list up. Jacob Junis for San Francisco. I may not use him against the Mets this week when they've been one of the best hitting teams in baseball. But at Philadelphia, who surprisingly their offense is, even with as good as Bryce Harper's been, they're mid-pack. And then at Miami for his two-step the following week. Why didn't the Royals figure out all you have to do when a guy throws a good slider is tell him to throw the slider more? No, he has to go to San Francisco and they tell him to do it or allow him to do it. However that works out, it's so frustrating. They're finally letting Brad Keller do it, so that does help. But so frustrating with Jacob Junis because his slider has been good for a long time and he's thrown it like 55% of the time this year and the results are there. Maybe not against the Mets, as I said, but definitely the following week. A guy that I think may be a little bit popular is, it comes back to what Derek said about Cincinnati Reds lineup probably being better than we think. Baltimore's lineup, they got Mountcastle back. They're adding Adley Rutschman. I think people will just see Baltimore and Cincinnati and their records and maybe jump at Rich Hill. And I'm a fan of Rich Hill, but as it's heating up, as we keep talking about, that's a couple of offenses that are better than people think.
And in a really tough park.
Right.
Yeah, Boston can get as humid and as hot as anywhere else in the country, especially as we get hit into June. So that's a good point to make there. All right, let's move on to this week then, guys. Who we like? Kevin, you talked about you still like Jacob Junis as a pickup for this week for wins and Ks if you are willing to play him against the Mets, if that start holds up. Is there anybody else that you're looking at, or are you just going to double down on Junis?
When I was talking about the Twins earlier, that includes Dylan Bundy and Chris Archer, who get the Royals and the Tigers. I know they've both been up and down. Archer has not been allowed to go third time through the order or even start an inning where the top of the lineup is going to come through for the third time. If he's ever going to get to five innings on that rule, it's against these two teams. And Dylan Bundy has been up and down. He's got a couple of huge blowups. These are the two teams that if I am short on starting pitching depth and I'm looking for some strikeouts from a guy that most other people don't want, when you got the Royals and Tigers in a week, I'll take a chance on you.
This is also the situation where if you were one of the people who spent your entire fab on George Kirby or Matt Brash early in the season or anybody else for that matter, and you're short on cash, these are the types of targets that you should be looking at. And if you need a pitcher, you have to take some chances when you don't have any money left, especially this early on in the season. So good call out there. Derek, any other pitchers that could get us some wins and Ks this week?
If I was going to take one more shot, you could maybe squint and hope for the best with Patrick Corbin, but I'm not a big Patrick Corbin guy, but of these guys, I think his set of matchups is maybe one of the best.
Man, I don't think my eyes can take that much squinting anymore, man, because it's especially at the end of last year, I relied on him a little bit in my head to head playoffs leagues and it did not end well, but you never know. That was last year though. All right, let's go on to ratios then, get out of the counting categories for pitchers and move on to our ratio categories. Kevin, who's going to help chip away at your ERA and whip?
Brock Burke. I'm all over the Texas Rangers this week, but Brock Burke has been phenomenal this season. 28 strikeouts in 21 innings pitched. He's pitched two innings or more in 8 of his 12 appearances and just 1.29 ERA. So everything's going great for Brock Burke in Texas. He is rostered a little bit more than I expected, and I think that was people speculating on saves in Texas. He's 15% rostered in the main event, more than we typically see for these ratio guys that we bring up each week, only 2% online championship. As far as that goes, just on a side note, Joe Barlow has recorded a save in 7 of his last 8 appearances. He is the guy in Texas right now. And he's only 70% rostered in Yahoo leagues. I know some of those may be points leagues where they don't necessarily need saves, but in some of those shallower leagues, take a look and see if Barlow's available if you do need saves. But Brock Burke right now in Texas, couple of innings each outing with a couple of strikeouts and 6-game week coming up for Texas.
Yeah, and ultimately, we don't know when Barlow's going to be back, as he had that, quote, hot spot earlier on in the week, the pre-blister, if you will, precursor to a blister, trying to avoid any long period of time or an IL stint by holding him back over the weekend. Obviously, Matt Bush had his opportunity to fill in, did not succeed. So Burke, you know, could walk himself into the back end of the bullpen pieces for the Rangers as well if Barlow were to miss any more time. Any other ratio cutters, if you will, Derek, that you might be looking at?
The guy that I've had my eye on for a few weeks now, and I just picked him up in Tout Wars, is Alex Vesia for the Dodgers. I want him to be used more. Like their bullpen is so deep, and he hasn't been getting like as many innings as some of the other guys. But the skills are like elite. Every projection system likes him. The bat likes him a lot. He has a good schedule this week. He's got 7 games. He's got 3 against Washington, 4 against Arizona. And he's a guy that in deeper leagues, and especially if he starts to earn Dave Roberts' trust a little bit more, I think, is a guy that can really help with those ratios.
I have some exposure to Vezia in a couple of DCs, and just that was early drafts, though, speculating on who might end up being at the back end of the closer situation for the Dodgers before obviously that got all settled. And he was lights out when he was pitching last year, or at least in the second half. Like you said, it all has to do with trust with Dave Roberts and putting him in more situations. Not even, it doesn't matter what situations they are, just more of them to get that volume. All right, let's talk about, I think, Derek's favorite section, and that's going to be saves here.
Yeah, you can skip me on this one. Sorry, guys.
Wait, what does the bat have predicted as the top save getter this week?
The bat doesn't predict saves. It doesn't care. Saves are dumb.
That is the correct answer, no matter who I'm asking. So that was good. You passed the test, Derek. I'm going to give out a couple of speculations as well. And of all places, of course, I'm going back to Cincinnati. And it's literally just because it's the new guys on the block, if you will. Alexis Diaz and Tony Santillan both got saves for the Reds this past week. They're widely available. And my reason for picking them up right now is because why not? They're going to be the benefit of them is they're going to be cheap because there's two of them, because there's not a guaranteed spot. Put both of them on your waterfall bids and be happy with whoever you get, and then be happy to drop them the following week when it doesn't work out. But neither one of them are probably going to be hurting any of your ratios in the meantime. So if you're desperate for saves, these guys have opportunity. And if the Reds are putting it together, as we've alluded to a couple of times in this episode, they could walk themselves into more save opportunities for Cincinnati. What I think the edge to me would probably go toward Diaz based on just overall production that we've seen. He's only let up 2 earned runs all season and just been striking out over 10 strikeouts per 9. So he's not going to hurt you anywhere else, even if he doesn't get you the save this week. Kevin, any speculation on possible saves either this week or into the future?
I say a lot, I don't like to cycle these guys in and out of the spot where I am using to speculate on saves and hope I get a guy in there. But just as a Royals fan and watching the games, Scott Barlow has seemed to be the guy for most of the season. However, the more I'm watching these games, he's the guy that's coming in the highest leverage situation, whether it is in the 9th inning or prior. So Staumont, he's been dropped places because he hasn't got a lot of saves. He's still pitching well. Even last year when people thought, oh, Staumont isn't doing so well, it was still a 2.6 ERA with over a strikeout per inning. That's where he's at this year. I think as the season goes on, if the Royals can win a few games, we might see Staumont actually getting more saves than Barlow, just from what I've seen watching him, which is so hard to predict. But in general, I don't like to swap in and out my speculative save guys.
Yeah, and Staumont was pretty clear that he never got over his COVID stint at the beginning of last season as well. So I'm putting a lot of what happened with him last year.
I have a lot of Emilio Pagan and I guess I could bring him up because he is available in some spots. And with that twin schedule over the next couple of weeks, I'm pretty hopeful I'll have Pagan in my lineups where I have him.
There you go. All right, we'll move on then to our final section. This is a wild card section for you guys to have some fun with. If you do have the ability to swap in somebody on either a stash spot on your bench or just wherever you want to take a flyer and you have that kind of flexibility. Kevin, I love the name you're putting on here, and I cannot wait to hear why you chose him. So I'm just going to let you go first.
I brought this up with Jeff on Thursday on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball podcast. I wouldn't put it past the Braves to go ahead and give Michael Harris a chance. He's tearing it up at AA as a 21-year-old. They've done this before. We've seen it with Acuna. We've seen it with Albies. Adam Duvall is playing center field for the Braves several times a week over the past couple of weeks. And as Jeff said, Adam Duvall is a decent enough outfielder, but he is not a center fielder. Also, Adam Duvall has got an OPS well below 600 right now. And when Acuna is playing DH, we got Ozuna in left field. We got Duvall in center field. These guys need an athletic outfielder. Michael Harris tearing it up at AA. I wouldn't put it past him giving him a shot, especially another couple of weeks here when the teams think they're comfortable with the Super 2 being passed up.
Yeah, how the mighty have fallen. And if you're if you gave that whole spiel before naming Michael Harris as the player you're talking about, I would have assumed you were talking about Drew Waters coming up and playing center field for the, because I feel like we talked about him more than once last year in a similar scenario. But he's not doing poorly in AAA himself, in the fact that I believe Waters is at this point on the 40-man roster. That might be more of a direction they might go. But the fact that they've held him down for so long, even though he's been in AAA for 3 years now, all right, and at some capacity, it's got to make you question how they feel about him in general and how confident they would have. I got some exposure to Michael Harris in a couple of different Dynasty and Keeper leagues, so I would not be opposed to this. But we'll see where Atlanta goes with this. Somebody to keep an eye out for sure.
Unlike last season and the season before, so many of these guys have already been called up or started the season up. So we're digging a little deeper in the prospect ranks for these guys this season.
That's true. All those teams want the possibility of getting that extra draft pick if their rookies do well in the voting. Derek, you got any wild cards out there worth speculating on?
Yeah, after talking about him before, put me down for Chris Sale. There's nobody in baseball, no prospect even, that has the upside of a healthy Chris Sale. And there's lots of downside, more than prospects probably. But if we're just talking about a fun flyer stash guy, he has the most upside of literally anybody.
Yeah, this, and as more news comes out about Sale actually doing stuff, actually throwing a baseball, that opportunity is going to, you know, get him off of your waiver wire is going to go down exponentially each time we see more news. So if you have that flexibility, that's a good target there as well for that upside alone. All right, those are some amazing recommendations, I think, from all of us here. Hopefully they all work out as well as Derek Butcher's did on Christian Walker last week. But to end us out, Kevin, you have any final words for our listeners that might be struggling to get through the next week's holiday weekend?
No, we were talking about projection systems and rest of season, and just that most probably realize this, but if you don't, you can use the same FanGraphs calculator that you used in the offseason with the rest of season BatX or other projection systems and come right up. And I've been doing that over the last few days, and you may be surprised at some of the names that pop up that are available in your leagues.
Yeah, it's really good to know what tools are available to you, where you can find them, and then find the ones that work for you. And the auction calculator, utilizing the rest of season projections, is definitely a mainstay for sure. All right, that's going to do it. Derek, thank you so much, man, for joining us on this one. Can you take a couple more seconds and just remind everybody what you do and what you do here and where they can find your work?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on. You can find me on Twitter at Derek Cardi. You can find my projection system, The Bat, at FanGraphs, and the aforementioned auction calculator on the player pages for rest of season projections, at RotoGrinders for DFS projections, and at EV Analytics for sports betting projections.
So make sure you're utilizing all the tools that you know that you need. And Derek puts out amazing content there, so make sure you're utilizing that to the best of your ability. That is going to wrap it up for episode 60 of On the Wire. Please make sure to subscribe, share, and review the podcast wherever you're listening. We will be back every Sunday with detailed fab breakdowns throughout the 2022 season. And of course, keep a lookout for Kevin's companion article over at pitcherlist.com that comes out every Sunday afternoon as well. You can follow myself on the Twitter at 80grade. That's all spelled out. And Kevin is at HastingKevin. Of course, follow the pod itself at OnTheWirePod. Once again, I'd like to thank our guest, Derek Cardi, for joining us. Follow him at Derek Cardi. That'll be linked in the show description as well. For now, I am Adam Howe. And on behalf of Kevin Hasting, thanks for listening. And with that, we bid you goodbye.